Hey you, it's time to unboss.
Guess who's back? Better than ever. Let's go. We are unbossers. We do it for the love of people and business. You're change makers for human organizations. This is yours truly, Nick the Unbosser. Let's go. Join me and my amazing guests. And unboss with me, unboss with me, unboss, unboss, unboss with me, unboss with me, unboss with me, unboss, unboss, unboss with me, unboss with me, unboss with me, unboss, unboss, unboss with me.
Hi there, and welcome to the fully refurbished Unbossers podcast. This is me, Nick the Unbosser, and this show and everything else we do with Unbossers is created by and for change makers for human organizations. Our goal with this show is to inspire and educate as many people as possible on how to combine the pursuit of business success with care for humanity. And this in a way that benefits all stakeholders of the organization. We talk with thought leaders and experts about the mindset, skills, tools, processes, and systems that turn business mumbo-jumbo buzzwords like employee empowerment, customer centricity, agility, and entrepreneurship into daily operational reality. So, ladies and gentlemen, this podcast is brought to you thanks to the gift economy. Here's how it works. We gift our energy, our time, and our insights into making these podcasts. And you, dear listener, you get to choose what feels right to give back to us. It's as simple as that, and it's truly amazing. So please take a moment after listening to this episode and reflect on what would feel good for you to give back in return and help us continue creating this amazing content. Here are some top-of-mind ideas of what you could do. You could subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channels. You could leave a review. You could recommend it to a friend, even make a small donation, or become an actual sponsor of the show. For more information, please check out www.unbossers.com. And now, without further ado, here's another inspiring episode of our Unbossers podcast. For the love of people and business. Hi, Olga.
Hello.
There are a few better ways to start a Friday morning than having a conversation with you. So thank you very much for being here.
Well, you're too kind. I'm really enjoying this as well.
Maybe let's start with a quick introduction of yourself. Who are you? What's your specialty, etc.?
Sure. I'm Olga Pagatsova. Great to meet all the listeners of this podcast and both of the hosts. Thank you for having me here. I'm a global customer experience professional. And to most people around there, it sounds like global who? Like, what is customer experience? And in a nutshell, it's a different way of looking at business and making sure that customers are at least considered within decision making. So that's what I advocate I've been doing this for the past 20 years. My early career started in logistics, actually. I was working for Bayer in animal health. And then I realized that my passion is really in finding out more about how societies operate, how people think. And I moved on to customer research, worked for quite some time at GfK, which is a global research institution. At that point, I was really fortunate to lead Thomson Reuters as a key account manager. And they demonstrated that research is much more than just finding out stuff about people. It's really putting it to good use. And they led the entire contact center transformation program off what the customers were telling them. And I thought, well, that's a really cool application of what I do. I'd like to do the same. And I moved on to head up a customer experience function at an insurance company in the UK. After that, I worked for the Bank of Cyprus for a bit, and 4 years ago, formed my own consulting company focused on CX implementation.
Right. Yeah. And that's how we know each other, because we are co-creating and collaborating together on the management systems master course that we are positioning in the market for change makers and executives who want to transform their organization. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on the perspective you bring in that master course.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm very excited about this. I'm so happy we came together to do it. Because what I observe in CX, both from my role as a consultant, but also I'm an executive director for the Customer Institute, and I'm well embedded in the industry. And the common problem we have is that we talk about CX very passionately, but mostly to CX professionals. So we have great understanding of each other, but we don't necessarily speak to the business in the right way. So very often CX remains as this nice side idea to do, and people lack understanding that it's not about hugging your customers, you know, it's about driving real competitive advantage through understanding your customers. But with all our skills in research and customer understanding and design thinking, we're still not so embedded or not as well embedded as I'd like it to be. Mm-hmm. And this course, to me, is a vehicle to bring in process improvement, agility, human resource management, or rather say people management, into all of this and build a viable management system that is based on customer understanding and on business needs as well. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. We're also super excited to be collaborating on that with you. And there was one, well, there's many things, but there was specifically one example on customer experience that you shared with us in the course of, in that master course. And that really triggered me to say, we need to have Olga on the podcast. And it's that you said, like, a prime example of customer experience is Ryanair. And I think both Charlotte and myself, we were like, what? Ryanair? How is that possible? So as a starting point to dive into the customer experience content, please explain to our listeners how Ryanair could possibly be a good example of customer experience.
Shocking, right? So Ryanair, why I like talking about Ryanair is because they're very true to their strategy in their customer experience. And Ryanair's strategy is that we get our passengers from A to B safely and cheap. That's it. You know, they don't do anything else. They don't do meals on board. They don't do add-ons unless you pay for them. So their customer experience, if a customer experience professional came into their organization and said, do you know what? People really enjoy free lounge tickets. It's like, yeah, okay, that's irrelevant because we get people from A to B cheap. So they're very clever in that, and they know who their customer is, what they need, and how to deliver that. These are the key foundations for customer experience. Their customers are prepared to tolerate some friction in their journey in exchange for low-cost tickets. Sometimes they push it too far, and they do have to have boundaries. They can't be rude to people, for example. That goes beyond their customers' understanding of good experience or cheap experience of getting from A to B. But all in all, they are deploying customer experience strategy that is absolutely in line with their business strategy.
Yeah, and that's maybe one of the biggest misconceptions related to customer experience. That is that it's a buzzword, and it means that everybody has to be like the premium brand that does everything, says yes to everything that the customer says. And that's something that we've learned from you, that it's not really about delighting the customer in every single step of the customer journey, but really in those moments that you want to make the difference, right?
Yeah, and I also hear to have a lot of clarity about what it is to serve your customer and what it is not.
Yes, exactly. That's the most important thing. You have to clearly define what is it that you are for your customers and what is it that you are not. And as long as those expectations are clearly set out, customers wouldn't complain about things that you are not, because you told them, I'm not that.
Is that one of the biggest challenges, that on the one hand, the marketing of a brand pretends to be a premium service or a premium product, and then on the other hand, the actual customer journey is what customers do not assess as being premium, so that there's a gap between what companies say and what they actually do? Is that the biggest challenge in customer service, a customer experience, I mean?
I think you're alluding to a bigger problem, is the disconnect or siloed thinking within the organization. So when there isn't a clearly defined experience strategy, then departments are going to work to achieve their individual objectives. And we have silos for a reason, and there are good reasons to have them. But they shouldn't be silos. They should be functional specialists who work together to deliver good customer outcomes or well-defined customer outcomes. So when marketing are communicating to the world one image of a company, and then service gets to pick up the pieces, that's not a very well-functioning company. It's not making it profitable. It's driving unnecessary costs. It's driving churn in customer base and customer dissatisfaction and employee dissatisfaction overall.
Yeah, indeed. If there's one thing you feel every change maker in an organization that wants to embed that customer focus, zero distance to customers in the organization, that if there's one thing you want that target audience to know about customer experience, what would that be? Hey, changemakers, I really hope you are enjoying this conversation. We will continue right away. I just have this one important thing I want to share with you, so listen up. You probably noticed that all of our conversations on this podcast are packed with tons of best practices, insights, and tools. But unless you're taking notes, and even then, you're probably forgetting most of it. And that is why, together with our premium customers, we co-created a super useful Unbossers notebook with all the key insights and tools in one place. So just go to our website, www.unbossers.com, and download the digital version of this notebook for free. And for only €25, we will deliver a printed version of the notebook to the address of your choice. So help yourself, support our cause, and go get that notebook.
I would say it's having clear cross-functional objectives for delivering customer value at every step of the customer journey.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, maybe with an example that you experienced?
Yeah. So one of the very well-known instruments in customer experience is journey mapping, customer journey mapping. What it is, in effect, it's creating a picture of your company from a customer's point of view. Usually, customers don't go too deep into understanding your processes or your systems or people who deliver those processes. They just say, I research, I buy, I get service, and I renew a contract in its very simplistic form. What the organization fails to understand, that to deliver those important touch points, they have to work together and they have to understand what is the customer outcome that they're working towards. So very often when we do journey mapping sessions, we always get people from different departments to do it. And very often is the first time when they actually speak to each other. And for example, in one journey mapping session, we spoke to the post room, you know, people who get post into the company. those still exist. And all of them have been there for 25 years. And when you ask them, so what's your role in the customer journey? I just get posts. I don't have a role in the customer journey. So, okay, well, so what happens if you don't sort the posts out properly? So, well, those cars are going to get lost and customers would never get their insurance done. Like, well, that's a pretty significant step in the customer journey, right? They're applying for something that they're not going to get. They're like, yeah, well, actually, yes. Like, well, what do you do when you get those cars? So, well, we sort them and some of them we scan and some of them we put into envelopes to be given to other departments. And what happens next? Well, they get taken to the second floor. And what happens next? And then they get sent to another office. They're like, well, how long does that take? Well, about a week. So you are effectively delaying the process of sale by just shifting an envelope from one place to another internally. Why don't you scan all of those cards and people just get them? Yeah, we never thought about it like this. It's just a process that we did. So they redesign the whole layout of their post room with pride because they now understood what is it that they're working towards. And their process improvement was just magical.
Hmm.
As well as I'm sure you can both relate is
I was thinking maybe
pride and engagement.
Yeah, maybe the customer journey mapping would be a good one, Charlotte, for the group we are trying to set up at one of our customers.
Yeah.
Create that awareness.
Because it also helps people to see their contribution to the clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how they we call this employee heroes, how they're holding hands in delivering that value. Even if you have zero interaction with the customer, you're always part of the chain. And if you're not there to help the customer, what are you there to do?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have a job?
So Olga, if we zoom out, what are for you the characteristics of a really customer-focused organization?
To me, it's the ability to take decisions with a customer in mind. And I'll explain what I mean. We have a lot of companies declaring customers at the heart of everything. It's hardly ever true, I must admit, because you also have other things as a part of your business. Your business has to be profitable. You also have employees. Well, are they not at the heart of your business? You have suppliers, you have partners. So a customer is who you're working for. And any decision that has been taken in the business has to be filter through that lens. It's not the only lens, but it's a very important lens. Very simple way to do it is many businesses have this project sign-off form that goes through a governance committee and marketing signing off and IT and finance. Well, why not have a line there to clearly specify how would this project benefit the customer? What are we looking to achieve for the customer and what's the value in it?
Mm-hmm. And let that validate by customers, because it's one thing to write a text about what I think is going to create value. It's something else that the customer actually validates. Yeah, this could be very valuable.
Sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. If it's systems change or something like that, customers wouldn't know. But at least you need to have some measurable outcomes. Satisfaction improves, or you get less complaints, for example, or you get more advocacy. So it has to be not just imagination. It has to have some KPI attached to it. I've introduced this once, and something like 30% of new projects just went. People couldn't justify it. It was just a pet project that they wanted to do.
Interesting. Saved a lot of money, that one extra question.
That one line.
And time. One thing that we often do when we work with customers is in the meetings to add an extra chair which is the customer chair. And during the meeting, when discussions are happening, sometimes invite people to get out of their internal perspective and sit on the customer's chair and try to empathize with what the customer would say about this discussion. Is that also a technique that you're familiar with?
Yeah, I think it's originated from Amazon and it's become very popular. It has to fit with the company culture.
True.
Some people might just say, it's, okay, we always have an extra chair in the room. That's it.
There needs to be openness.
Yes. Yeah. We sometimes modify it a little bit and we ask that in every meeting, people take turns by assuming the role of the customer. So today it's your IT director who's going to be the customer advocate. And he really has to challenge the rest to say, okay, well, what's in it for the customer? What is the value we're bringing? It's the same concept, but what I'm trying to say has to
Do you have other examples of bringing customer-focused decision-making in practice?
Yes, many.
Just I would your like top of mind name. So we already have include the customer's perspective in your project briefs. We have include some kind of customer perspectives in your meeting and discussions. Maybe one or two extra examples for our listeners, top of mind.
Listen to what the employees have to say about the customer. Currently I have a project working on developing an internal customer portal for a company. And the traditional way of developing something like this would be, okay, what capabilities do we have? What is it that we can make digital? What can we push to self-service and save ourselves some operating costs? What we are teaching them to do is to go through a design thinking process to say, okay, what is it that customers are struggling with? And how can we make that easier by deploying digital tools? And then filtering that through the capabilities and costs and time required. Now, the challenge in this project is that culturally, the company is not used to talking to customers about subjects like this. And it's a B2B environment. It can be difficult sometimes. So as a good proxy, we spoke to over 100 employees who are frontline or not even frontline, to say, okay, well, what do you think would bring value to customers? And their original specification got modified quite a bit in terms of priorities because employees know what calls they receive into the contact center, what customers are really complaining about, what would make their jobs easier as well. If they're doing everything they can for the customer at the expense of their time and value add, that's also not a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this reminds me, Charlotte, about the episode we made with Julia from Open Strategy. So for your information, Olga, Julia is a professor at the University of Innsbruck. She co-authored a book called Open Strategy, where she advocates that the entire strategic process shouldn't be something closed in an ivory tower, but that we should really open it up and invite customers, employees, suppliers in the both the thinking, the ideation part of the strategy, the formulation part, and the execution part. And I see a lot of similarities there. Right, Charlotte?
Yeah, it's really important.
Yeah. Ecosystem thinking, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It has a much higher chance of being successful.
So, Olga, a very practical question. What we sometimes experience is that there is tension that companies have a strategic goal both on the customer side. So we want to create a great customer experience. And a second strategic goal, we want to be financially very performant and efficient. Yeah. And what we sometimes notice is that arises tension between both. So that in the way that you design the organization or in the way that you do resource planning or whatever, you kind of have to make a choice. Do I prioritize on the experience of the customer? And as a consequence, maybe have a little bit less efficiency or financial performance, Or do I focus on efficiency and performance, and as a consequence, maybe impact in a negative way the customer experience? So is this something you are familiar with, and what's your take on that?
Okay, I'll answer that. Have you ever been to IKEA?
Of course.
I personally know people who divorced over going to IKEA. If you ask, like, do you love going to IKEA stores? If you're over 7 years old, you'd probably say,
Yeah, I wonder in their customer journey mapping that they are maybe thinking of setting up divorce lawyers in the store. So that they, as a new business model.
There is inbuilt friction in their customer journey. You can't get out of that maze until you finish the maze, right?
Yeah.
This is not always enjoyable. But it's very effective in terms of driving sales, because you go there to buy a spoon and you come out with a trolley full of stuff that you really, really miss in your life and you couldn't live without. And your overall experience, the memory of that experience is good. You'll go again, because the right moments in your journey were designed right. For example, the restaurant. It's right in the middle of your maze. It's cheap. It's got kids-friendly options. Everyone loves IKEA meatballs. And they make sure that you get a rest so that you could continue your wonderful shopping journey. And also, like, other things that are cleverly designed are mitigating the negative effect of you having to do what the company wants you to do. So with that, we're coming back to your question and our original thinking. Do we have to delight our customers at every step of the journey and therefore sacrifice our profit for the sake of being nice? No, we don't. We have to understand what really matters to customers. And there is a peak and rule. People remember the peak of their experience that matters to them, and the end of the experience. Everything else just has to work. So that there is a basic requirement that you have to get right. If you want to change your address with a supplier, you don't want to be delighted, you just want to change. Some countries go as far as doing it automatically. So if you register a change of address with a government institution, your bank, your insurance company, everyone else gets alerted and it just gets done for you. You don't even have to know about it. In other countries, we've introduced self-serve a lot more, where you have to call into the contact center. That is already a friction point. You don't want to do it. The contact center doesn't want to do it. It's not a value add activity. So that needs to be delivered, but at the minimal cost. It just has to work. Then you free up resources to think about those delight moments and making sure you get them right. Because if you get them wrong, your peak moment becomes negative, and that's what you remember.
And how do you assess which moments should be peak moments and which moments should just work?
You talk to your customers and you do customer needs research. We have a specific methodology called customer needs system. And it's on the surface, it's very simple. You just ask customers, what is it that you need from this company? It's not very often that people do that, surprisingly. They drive it from kind of from the inside out. Say, would you recommend this? Can we get anything more from you? But in effect, we just say, okay, what can we do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then through analysis, we build a hierarchy of needs and we understand what are the drivers behind those needs and all that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you relate that then to the ultimate customer experience and performance, the potential tension that can be there? Is it the fact that as you are being very clear on what it is and what it is not, and consistence, is that a reason why performance will follow, or can you elaborate more on that?
Yes. So if you stop wasting money on things that don't matter to customers, stop trying to delight them, and you deliver that in the most cost-effective way, your margin goes up. And then you discover what's really important. And this is where you have an opportunity to grow. You can upsell, cross-sell. You can develop new products. This is where your innovation opportunity is. So that is a more, you know, sustainable growth. You have a chance to become an innovator in your market. So you discover a need that is universally unmet, and you can be capitalizing on it, if we deploy business speak here, and you can charge premium because you're the only one who's doing it. Mm-hmm. But also that delights your customers at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Imagine, Olga, that you are in a traditional, you're in a traditional organization, been existing for decades, fully optimized for efficiency and really inside out thinking, right? And you want to transform the organization more in an outside in mindset and customer experience mindset. Where do you start?
Leadership, ideally. Mm-hmm.
What exactly with leadership?
You need to have desire and foundation for change. Like, why do you want to change this fully functioning, awesome machine that's delivering what the leadership wants it to deliver? If they say, no, we don't want to change it, then as a customer experience professional, you don't stand much of a chance. Mm. If they realize that we are falling behind the times, we know that maybe growth is stagnating, or we're not getting the right people, our employees don't align with our values anymore, we need to do something, but we don't know how to do it, then we can show the way. And that way is usually small pilots. So we can educate on the concept, but it's very dangerous to turn a huge oil tank around 180 degrees and start going into a different direction. There's a chance it's going to sink. And there's no reason to do that. If the organization is performing, it needs fine-tuning, not burning everything to the ground and mm-hmm. building again.
Go ahead, Charlotte.
Yeah, well, I'm building on that. Imagine that you are in a situation and the leadership is open to the change and you start this journey and you have the small pilots. What do people need in terms of skills, mindset? What are important aspects there to work on?
Collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most important things in delivering customer experience. You really have to work together across silos. You need to be open to a different way of doing things. And there are tools and techniques, again, that we bring in to teach people how to do that. But you need to be able to see that an external world may perceive your company differently to what you're able to see internally. Mm-hmm. And really listen to the customer and take their point of view into the account. As an organization, you need to have the capability to empower your people. It cannot be command and control. It's a different mentality. Mm-hmm. And what else? I think it's the measurement of it. Like, the traditional measurement in the organization is not geared usually towards incorporating customer value outcomes. And what we advocate is a balanced scorecard where we measure effectiveness from a process point of view, effectiveness from a business point of view, if, are we making money? And a very important part of it is customer feedback. Only when the three align is working.
That's an interesting one, because when we help companies onboard their organization, there's really, I'm even thinking that onboarding and customer experience in very much ways are synonyms to each other. What we notice is when organizations are driven to unboss because they want to empower their people to delight their customers. And they are thinking about how do we measure the impact of our journey. Typically, from a customer perspective, the only thing they can think of is Net Promoter Score to measure whether they are improving their customer experience. So I'm very curious to hear from you. Is that really the best way to measure this, or are there alternatives?
It's one of the ways, and it's what we call a relationship measure. So overall, how strong is your relationship? Is it strong to the point where you talk about it at dinner parties? I do not advocate using Net Promoter Score as a transactional measure. So let's say you speak to an employee, you put the phone down, and then would you recommend our company on the basis of this one conversation? Well, no, because it's one part of my journey and there may be other things that have happened to me. So for transactional measures, again, it's important to understand what is it that the customer is trying to achieve in this step of the journey. So for basic requirements, for example, going back to our example, changing the address has to be easy. So we should ask that, was it easy or not? If it was easy, then we achieved our outcomes. So it has to be a combination of various measures that align to the customer journey.
Yeah. And are customers okay with receiving multiple questions at multiple moments during the year? So different questions at different moments during the year from the same company. What's your experience? Because often the reason I ask is often there's a tendency to think to not communicate or ask too much of your customers, like asking to answer some questions.
Yes, there's this danger of over-serving, but presumably you don't have just one customer. You have hundreds or thousands or even millions. So you can be pretty clever with your contact strategy. You just need a sample. You don't need to ask every single customer. Within your contact strategy, you need to set contact rules. So one customer cannot be contacted more than once in every 2 or 3 months. Okay. That would be reasonable.
Okay.
So definitely not after every interaction. And surveys are part of the experience as well. Do not send surveys that are 20 minutes long. Just ask what you need to ask and be done with it.
Yeah. Okay. Olga, imagine I'm a CEO of a corporate organization and I've listened to your story and you've created the awareness that I really, really have to go down this adventure of customer delight, customer experience in our organization. What is the biggest mistake I can make despite the good intentions that I have?
Mandate what customer experience should be. I think that would be a big mistake if you just as one person declare that our company has to do this for our customers. It wouldn't be effective because you only have one point of view. You need to involve other people into creating that vision of experience.
And how much time should I give myself to A, come to that vision, and then B, roll it out?
To come to that vision, we come to that vision in a 4-hour workshop. Really, it doesn't have to be complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Your people already have the knowledge. You just need to align their different points of view and come up with a single picture, not multiple pictures in people's heads. To implement that vision, it could be years. Hopefully you take less than that if you're serious about it and you're prepared to start with the leadership team and abide by the principles that you define as an organization. Then it filters through pretty quickly. If it's coupled with empowerment, then you could probably get it done within 12 months. Not done. You can't get the customer experience done. It's a way of living. It's not something like a project.
Mm-hmm.
But you can embed it in a sustainable way within 12 months if you really focus on it.
Okay. Mm. we're going to the end of the conversation here. I'm curious, Charlotte, what did you learn about this topic from Olga? What's the one thing you take away?
I take away that there's so much parallels with embossing. It's as if, I mean, it's another perspective, of course, but in a way we are talking about the same thing.
The same dynamics, yeah. Same approaches.
The same mindset switches that are needed. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I found
it. Didn't touch much on the employee experience, but that's a very big part of customer centricity. So yeah, I'm not surprised in any parallels.
Okay, Olga, super thank you for for this conversation. It was enlightening. And we wish you all the best and looking forward to continue to collaborate with each other on the Management System Master Course.
Absolutely, same here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so that is a wrap for this episode of our Embossers podcast. If you liked it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you can stay up to date with all our future content. For the love of people and business, keep embossing.